Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time zone you might be in. Welcome to Out of the Abyss, where we drag all kinds of paranormal topics from the darkest depths up to the surface. I'm your host, Lot, and I am joined by my co-hosts, Pip and Jake. Gentlemen, how you doing? Hello. How you feeling?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm excited to get going on this podcast. We've been putting a lot of work in.
Yeah.
Perfecting this. So it is time for a debut episode. I just want to take a minute and go over how everybody feels about the topics that we're going to be dealing with in this podcast. Personally, I really want to believe. I'm not sure that I do, but I'd really like to. Pip, thoughts?
I also really want to believe. I'm trying to think of a fun way to put it, but I generally believe, although I've got, you know, that kind of doubt, like, hey, there's probably not true, but I would rather it is true.
Fair. Jake?
I'm on the other side of the fence, man. Honestly, like, half the stuff just doesn't make sense to me. And if it doesn't make sense, then doesn't sell it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, see, that's my problem, is some of that doesn't make sense. But I feel like I'm a little more willing to kind of accept it, though, than you are.
No,
100%. Some of these.
Beautiful, because today's topic is going to require a fair amount of acceptance. Let's say acceptance. We're covering a classic, werewolves. One of those topics that everybody knows something about, but not a lot of people take the time to kind of look at the historical examples in context. It's just kind of the Hollywood werewolf, right?
Right. That's my only experience with werewolves, basically.
Yeah.
As it happens, you guys are in luck, because this topic has a lot of examples through history. So I figured that we would start at the oldest and then work our way forward to, like, the present day so that we can kind of get more details from modern stories.
Is Beowulf a werewolf?
No, Beowulf was a Norse hero. Beowulf actually meant bee wolf or bee hunter, which just meant bear. Beowulf just means bear.
Wait, like he hunted bees, dude?
Well, bears hunted bees, right? Because they like honey.
Yo, bear. So, no, bee hunting with the smallest caliber rifle you've ever seen.
side note here. We're getting sidetracked, but did you know that technically the animal with the best KD ratio against people is the killer bee?
I believe it.
I would also believe that.
So people can fight off a lot of things, but it turns out that small winged insects buzzing around us just causes us to immediately give up and surrender whatever territory we were trying to defend and flee. And people do that very quickly.
Yeah, actually true.
I find when confronted with bees, I often just leave.
I just run.
People can fight all kinds of huge predators and big animals, but bees, I'm tapping out instantly. I'm done.
Ain't having that.
Now, the origin of the word werewolf is from the Old English verwolf, meaning man-wolf.
Meaning he were a wolf.
He were a wolf. The origin of the other word that you hear a lot, lycanthrope, is actually from the Greek leukanthropos, meaning predictably wolf person.
Really creative with these, dude.
They really made it up as they went along. Werewolf turns out to have a pretty broad definition. In some instances, it's like a byword for a serial killer, used to provide a frame of reference for how hideous the crimes were, like maybe they killed people with their teeth and hands, or maybe they were cannibals. All that real fun stuff.
Yeah, this guy is brutal as though a wolf.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's used to discuss certain wolves that were extremely lethal. And finally, it's used the day that we think of it today. A person who transforms, by curse or by disease, into a wolf. Or a therianthropic wolf-human hybrid.
Do you want to give the people at home a definition of that word? Not me, of course.
Yeah, I know, therianthropy. I know what it means.
You guys know what it means. You talk about it all the time.
Oh, yeah. But
therianthropy is the blending of human and animal into a hybrid. Think like Egyptian gods or movie werewolves or like anime cat girls.
The trifecta, dude.
That's where all my therianthropy discussion comes from.
Important to note, anamorphs, not therianthropes. They fully became animals. They're like shapeshifters. Therianthrope is like if an anamorph stopped their transformation halfway.
Can they do that?
So you stop in the middle picture, dude.
Can you do that? I don't know. We need to write... What was her name? A.K. Applegate? We need to write...
I've never read an anamorph. Mr. and Mrs.
Applegate. What?
You've never read anamorph? Dude, that was like an integral part of my childhood.
Gentlemen, we are pausing this podcast right now so that Pip can go get a background in anamorphs, which is, by the way, going to be critical reading for this. You're not going to understand any of this if you haven't read anamorphs.
True, yeah. Anamorph, werewolf, same thing.
Core lore.
All I know is that if you stay in there too long, then you stay the animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a bunch of teenagers being animals?
Being teenagers who are animals. Yeah,
I don't know where the plot comes from with that. It's just like, hey, what's up? Greg is wolf now.
There's an alien race of slugs that enter people's ears and take over their brains, and they've been invading, and the Animorphs are trying to fight them off because they were given these abilities.
By turning into a duck?
Well, I mean, you use different animals for different jobs, right? Need to infiltrate? Bam, become a fly and fly in the thing, and then turn into a human, and then you turn into a bear and just roll your way down the hallway.
Can they change into different things?
Yeah, it was a thing where like they had to touch the animal and like absorb its DNA, and then they could. I can't remember if they unlocked it permanently or it was like the last animal that you touched. But
there was a point in the story where they had like a bunch of transformations, but I don't remember when that was. Cause it's been like since I've read one of the books, but you know,
it's like Teen Titans if everybody was Beast Boy.
Yes, and it was surprisingly dark.
Yeah.
Really?
Not really a kid story when you really think about it.
Huh.
Dude, the idea of alien slugs that crawl into your ear and take over your brain. And by the way, so when these things invade, they bring like a bunch of different alien races that they've already subjugated as like their shock troopers. Dude, think about like, it's like the thing, right? Where you're never sure if someone is actually them.
All right, that's fairly spooky.
It's super spooky.
Let's get back on track here. Therianthropy is notable because of its proliferation. Places all around the world tell stories of humans that are crossed with other predators, and not just wolves. In Africa, they have the werehyena. And in South America, you got werepumas or runa uturunku.
Nice.
Thank you.
I feel like I've met people who have got kind of a werehyena vibe to them.
Definitely.
Those were just homeless people.
Hey now. Yeah.
Definitely.
I remember one homeless guy we used to know specifically who had that kind of vibe.
Therianthropy is kind of interesting because it brings up the question of like whether these beliefs occur because of a common fear that we all have or if there's something deeper to it. I mean, springing up all around the world with like a similar idea, that's kind of spooky.
Yeah.
It is a little weird that so many different cultures have their own version of the same thing. I do find that a little weird.
This brings us to the next big question of the podcast. What animal would you guys be if you could be an animal-human hybrid?
An animal.
Jake?
I don't know, dude. I would probably... Some kind of like, big predator cat. Probably.
Ooh,
not because I'm good at hunting, just because I like sleeping.
My first instinct was you being the saber-tooth from Ice Age.
I mean, same thing, but you know, a little less clumsy, I guess.
I believe his name was Diego.
Yep.
Yeah, which character from Ice Age would you be? Where Sid?
Pip. Just tell us what animal human hybrid you'd be.
I'm on that topic of Ice Age now in my head. I think I'm just be a sloth and just vibe. By the light of the full moon, I grow moss.
the were-sloth. He's incredibly dangerous, but he never manages to leave the room before the transformation ends, so it's pretty harmless. So we begin our journey through history at around 1600 BC with the legend of King Lycaon of Arcadia, which was a region of ancient Greece, or kind of the predecessor to ancient Greece, which was known as the Aegean States. It's just a bunch of city-states around the Mediterranean and the Greek peninsula. Lycaon was a powerful and arrogant ruler who decided to test Zeus's omniscience by inviting him to dinner. Before the meal, Lycaon murdered and cooked his own youngest son, Nyctimus, and fed his son to Zeus. Zeus... Yeah, yeah. We get dark.
Isn't there a better way to do that? Can you just be like, hey, how many fingers am I holding up behind my back?
Can you just spit in his food?
It's like that episode of South Park where Cartman kills that kid's parents, puts him into the chili at the chili.
Scott Tenorman.
Yeah, because he sold them pubes or something, right? Oh God.
Yeah, yeah. All and right, then he invited Scott Tenorman's favorite band, Radiohead, to witness him crying.
Look at this loser crying because he ate his parents.
But yeah, I mean, couldn't you just be like, here, Zeus, here's your hamburger helper, but just, like, have spit in it?
Yeah, or like, hey, Zeus, I'm thinking of a number between I and V.
Ooh, sometimes
you gotta take the nuclear approach, though, you know?
That's fair. Zeus learned of this plan, of course, because he's Zeus. So he transforms Lycaon into a wolf and then resurrects his son. Although, interestingly, it doesn't say anything about him, like, resurrecting the or returning the missing parts of the son. Just resurrecting. So I imagine
just
he's...
pile of fucking meat on the ground, dude.
Just screaming for a minute before passing away again, yeah.
It's very, very Greek.
Why have you done this? And then and Zeus just, like, dusts his hands off. He's like, another family saved, and just flies off. Family man, that's what they called Zeus.
Yep.
But that's not even the only Greek connection, though. In 440 BC, we get to Herodotus, who anyone who likes history knows that Herodotus was the most accurate historian ever. Highly recommended reading if you want to listen to stories about people with, like, faces on their stomachs and stuff like that.
Oh, the Cragmen.
Yeah. So he talked about the Nyeri people, and the Nyeri were a people living in modern-day northern Ukraine, who would turn into a wolves for a few days each year.
Could they, like, control it? Was it like, gotta meet my quota coming up. Might as well take it now.
I think that they just got transformed for a couple days against their will, and then were just, like, wolves for a little bit, and then just changed back. Herodotus himself says he doesn't believe any of that, but the people who he spoke to swear that it's true. I'm not going to rule it out, because it happened in Eastern Europe, and I'm fucking terrified of Eastern Europe.
Yeah, yeah,
dude, we've all seen Hostel.
I have not seen Hostel.
We have to watch Hostel, because it is... You will instantly be like, oh, I can't go to Eastern Europe anymore.
I've already thought that anyways, but...
So far, we're having movie night, and we're having book club, Pip.
Yeah, we got this Hostel, we got... Animorphs, we got Debbie Does Dallas. No? Okay.
Okay, sure. That one too. Throw it in there.
My favorite movie, Pip Does Portland. Next up for the Greeks, we've got Demarcus, 450 to 400 BC, who was an Olympic boxer from Arcadia who participated in the rites at the main Arcadian festival of Lycaeus, or Wolf Zeus. These rites... focused on cannibalism and on their connection to the original myth of Lycaon, which I don't... That's a bad connection. Why are you having a festival about that?
It's
I don't
a
get
weird
it.
Celebration.
Just leave that. Just leave that in the past, dude. Just move on.
Hey, here's this... Let's all have a party, because one guy tried to con a god and failed.
I would not put jail time on my resume. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or cannibalism, for that matter.
Well, hold on. Maybe if it was like UFC.
Applying for a government job.
Hey, there you go.
The legends say that he tasted human flesh and then was made into a wolf for 9 years. And what's interesting about this one is that it's kind of corroborated by other ancient sources. Like, the geographer Pausanias wrote of it in Description of Greece, adding that if you didn't eat human flesh again for those 9 years, you could turn back into a human. Augustine and Pliny also both agreed that this was true, but they said that the timeline was 10 years and not 9.
I'm more inclined to agree with the 10-year versus the 9-year, just because it, you know, it's a nice round number.
Yeah.
I like that more.
It is more aesthetic. Plato even mentions this in The Republic, but he didn't mention that you could turn back into a human. He just said that you turned into a wolf. Game over.
I think maybe he just wanted to discourage that kind of thing.
You just get the Dark Souls "you died" screen.
You wolfed.
Since you wolfed. That's what I was going to say.
You anamorphed. Next, we are off to the Romans, who, as per usual, just stole shamelessly from the Greeks. In the neighborhood of 50 to 20 BC, we have our main man, Virgil, who was a poet. Virgil wrote of Morus, a necromancer and an herbalist who used herbs to transform into a wolf. Can we get a dramatic reading of this excerpt of Virgil?
To quote, "these herbs, these poisons that were called in Pontus, it was Morius himself that gave them to me. Such herbs are common weeds in Pontus. Oft by their sorcery I have seen Morius turn wolf and hide within the wolves, oft call forth spirits from their deep dug graves, and charm away to other fields whole harvests of sown corn."
Beautiful. And beautiful. Also,
I thought at first it was supposed to be a poem, but it doesn't really read like a poem. It just talked like that.
I think it okay, first of all, a lot of old poetry was more about the rhythm than the rhyme scheme. Like, yep. Look at Shakespeare with, like, iambic pentameter, right? And a lot of this old poetry was meant to be kind of, you would learn it, and then you would have, like, a stick, and you'd beat it on the ground while you recited these poems.
"These herbs, these poisons, that were called..."
they call them rhythmless pip.
Also, I imagine that it flowed a lot better in Latin.
Yeah, I mean, I think Latin would definitely sound better than whatever this is.
It's also really funny to me to think about, like, if you had a whole field of sown corn, and it was, like, starting to sprout into, like, those big, tall corn plants, and you woke up one morning, and your field just had nothing in it, but the next-door neighbor's field, who had not planted yet, just was filled with the corn that used to be in your field, you'd be like, "What is this?"
"Hey, wait a minute, that's mine."
Damn, can't have shit in ancient Greece.
Can't have shit in Rome.
Ah, wrong country.
Next up, we have Petronius Satyricon from 60 AD that has a detailed account of a soldier that turns into a wolf. Now, this is definitely fiction. It's satire, Satyricon, but it still shows that the concept was there in the public eye, right? People knew what you were talking about if you talked about people turning into wolves.
How do we know it's definitely fiction?
I mean, we don't. We just assume it is, just like we assume that parts of the Iliad are fiction, where gods are coming down and being like, "Hey, you, now I'm giving you the power to see gods. Hey, you, I'm giving you the power to just slay the Ilians," and yeah, crazy stuff. We just assume that wasn't true.
That's what they want you to think. Big God is keeping you down.
Big God is keeping you down.
You know, big money, big God.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't want you to see the Cyclops. I've never read the Iliad.
The Iliad is great, honestly. It's some real good content. But
I've seen the Simpsons parody. I think I got the gist.
So we're on Animorphs, we're on Hostel, and now we've added the Iliad. We are really filling up our free time in this episode.
Now, the Iliad's going to be 90% of that time, by the way.
They got an audiobook for that?
I'm sure they do.
Probably.
They'd just be prepared to waste the next, like, 70 hours or something.
Also, be aware that old writing devices are nothing like modern writing devices. So there's lots of good old literature, but it's kind of hard to listen to. Like, I was listening to Journey to the West, and Journey to the West is a really incredible story that is the origin for, like, all modern, like, shonen anime, where, you know, there's, like, the plucky hero that goes and assembles his crew, and they've got, like, a mission, and each person has, like, a different specialty. That's from Journey to the West. But it also, because it was written in Chinese, has a lot of stuff where, like, Sun Wukong gets his new name. And it's, like, 3 pages of them being like, "Oh, well, you have this quality, so you have this character in your name, and this quality, so you have this character in your name, and this quality, so you have this character, because it means 2 things. But then when you combine them all, you simplify them down into these characters, and it is read this way, but it can also be read this way. And you're like, because you're not Chinese, you're like, what are you talking about? What is any of this mean?
You lost me a while ago.
It's
dude.
Like a visual homonym. It's the wildest stuff.
Yeah, it's just one of those culture shock things.
Yeah.
Right.
We finally get to the real meat of the topic here. European werewolf lore. And there's a lot of it. Because this is one of those aspects of folklore that was based on a very real fear in the Eurasian wolf. Until very recently, wolves were the apex European predator. It's kind of hard for me to explain just how powerful and frightening a wolf is since we've driven them away from so many populated areas. But it's important to remember what wolves did. Eat livestock. Even if they aren't going for people, they're eating the animals that are the difference between your family surviving the winter and your family starving to death over the winter. So even if they're just going for sheep, they're still a deadly threat.
No, you just eat the wolf.
Now the hunter is the hunted.
Listen, the wolf ate my food. Gotta eat the wolf.
Imagine like a rat infestation in a granary, except like the rats are all very large, aggressive predators who will also eat unattended children and lone travelers.
Since this is like the start of every Dungeons & Dragons campaign.
Yes. So, like witches, the trials for werewolves began in what's now Switzerland in the early 15th century. Witches were accused of becoming wolves, of riding wolves, of charming wolves, of liking dogs, whatever they could stick. The Middle Ages even saw laws against werewolves officially codified, such as the Danish King Snut's Ecclesiastical Ordinances, which aims to make sure that, and I quote, the madly audacious werewolf do not too widely devastate, nor bite too many of the spiritual flock.
I just want to stop for a second and really bring attention to his Ecclesiastical Ordinance. That's the best fucking title for anything ever, dude.
I thought we were going to bring attention to King Snut.
I mean, he's fine, dude. He's chilling away. He's Danish. Just being weird over there.
I guess Snut makes more sense than Canut.
So, to begin our cavalier stroll through European furry history, we open with one person that everyone associates with werewolves. St. Patrick.
Ah, yes.
Do we?
The Lucky Charms.
You don't?
No, I think like, you know, getting drunk and leprechauns.
Oh, you think modern fun St. Patrick?
Was he not fun?
Being a wolf is magically delicious.
Around 430 AD, he arrived in Ireland with the objective of converting the people living there to Christianity. And according to legend, he cursed one Welsh king named Vereticus to transform into a wolf. And apparently, he developed a taste for it, because he started cursing tribes that he found too licentious and stubborn to accept Christianity.
I refuse to believe this on the fact that name is not even fucking Welsh, dude.
Vereticus? Yeah, there's not enough guttural sounds.
That's where all the European wolves came from. They're just dudes. Or descendants of the people who were turned into wolves.
Just Vereticus and his friends, dude.
It's a little racist to imply that the Irish are actually wolves, but I respect it. Yeah, everybody knows that all wolves descend from the Irishmen.
No, listen, I'm saying the wolves are actually Irish.
How about it's every Welsh person that doesn't have all those weird fucking, like, throat sounds in their name. They're the wolves, dude.
They're the wolves. All right.
They're the wolves.
Next up, Bianus, son of the Bulgarian king Simeon in about 970 AD. According to legend, he was a magician who could shapeshift into a wolf and go invisible. And I thought it was kind of interesting how this wasn't too far off like the classic vampire powers, where they could like become mist or transform into wolves or explode into a cloud of bats.
Right.
I think if my name had the word anus in it, I too would seek incredible power to compensate.
You'd also want to go invisible?
Yeah.
Just throw on pumped up kicks as loud as you can and transform into a wolf.
But all right, like, serious question. Like was he an invisible wolf? Or was it like he could be a wolf and he could be invisible? Or was it always at the same time?
I think it was either or both. Like, they were separate powers that he could utilize.
Maybe one after the other?
An invisible wolf sounds... So imagine just walking. You're just walking. And then something appears. Mid-leap at your face already, like full flight. You had no idea this was coming. And just a full wolf.
Oh, I would die.
It's like three feet away from you, mid-jump, mouth already open, going for your throat. And it just appears.
It's a little terrifying.
Yeah.
I would immediately perish.
Now, we get the chance to enter the more graphic part of our episode. And I mean, from here on, we are basically just going to get more and more gory and violent until the end of the episode.
Like Animorphs.
We begin...
I assume.
Just like Animorphs. Remember the 34th Animorph book where that one character just got disemboweled by the others?
There's a lot.
No, there's no way there's that many Animorphs.
There's way more. There's way more than 34.
There's like 100 plus, dude.
What the hell?
And one of my favorites, my parents got this for me. My dad's going to be listening to this. Thank you, Dad. Thank you, Stepmom, for getting me. It was like an Animorphs Choose Your Own Adventure book.
Oh my god, you're like, the Animorph.
Yeah, where you were an Animorph that like joined the crew and went through and made choices, and there was a time machine and you could go back and transform into like dinosaurs. Wait.
Dude, I think I had the same book, actually.
It was so good.
Oh, I don't really remember. It was so long ago, but it sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm seeing a whole new side of y'all.
Oh man. This was the stuff that basically... This was one of the things that really helped hook me into, like, fantasy and sci-fi.
So that's what turned you into a furry.
Yeah, that's what did it.
And a All furry. Right.
So, after our second Animorphs-related tangent of the episode...
Wait, no, hold on. What happens if an Animorph touches a furry? Can they turn into a furry?
It's one of life's great mysteries, dude. We'll never know.
Instantly becomes a degenerate. So we got the werewolves of Poligny in the early 16th century. We've kind of jumped ahead a little bit.
They're known for being very open in their relationships.
The French? Or the furries? No,
the werewolves of Poligny.
Polygamy?
Alright, Pip's out of the podcast. Welcome to Out of the Abyss with Lot and Jake. So we have two Frenchmen by the names of Pierre Bergot and Michel Verdun who were arrested on charges of witchcraft and cannibalism. But they had some interesting confessions to make. Bergot claimed that two decades earlier, his flock of sheep had been scattered in a storm. And while he was looking for them... Hey, this is a big deal, dude.
No, I'm just imagining them blowing away like tufts of cotton.
Sheep NATO, dude.
I was going to say, imagine if lightning struck and all the food in your house got so scared it just left.
Well, there's not much there anyways.
So, while he's looking for his sheep, he encounters three black horsemen, like ringwraiths, who ask him about his troubles. And he explains the problem, and one of the riders tells Bergot that if he pledged to serve the man's master, the man's nebulous, nameless master, he would not only find his lost sheep, but would be protected from further trouble and be given money. He's getting that paycheck. So, cha-ching. Of course, Bergot agrees to meet with him again in a couple of days. He finds his sheep and then goes to the meeting where he learns that this nebulous master was the devil. Shocker. So he swears himself to Satan and he renounces Christianity. And to signify this, he kissed the man's left hand, which he said was, and I quote, black and ice cold as that of a corpse. He said this man was named Moiset.
Wait, what was the name?
Moiset. M-O-Y-S-E-T. Moiset. God.
If my name was Moiset, I'd probably be the devil too, honestly. That's just really unfortunate.
I must turn against the world that would name me Moiset.
That's how you do it.
So when he got tired of the creepy, dark goth life 2 years later, Bergot tried to renege on his deal by just going to church again. So he must have been Catholic because he just showed up and was like, yeah, sorry, I've been worshipping the devil and living as a werewolf. And they were like, all right, we're going to need three Hail Marys and a full rosary. And you're good.
Forgive me, Father. It's been 2 weeks since my last Animorph.
Forgive me, Father, for I have wolfed. Verdun approached him and persuaded him to renew his devilish deal on the promise of getting more money. Another bag. This man making moves. They then went to the woods, where a ceremony of some kind was taking place. Now, with the promise of getting money, honestly, my first thought is that he went to, like, a ceremony in the woods where they were, like, cooking crack or, like, making meth, and they were like, we need up. You to go.
Hey, yo, were we here? We here for the devil.
Just water, coke, baking soda. I don't know the recipe. I'm just saying. So Bergot describes it as such. In a wood near Chastel, Charnon, we met with many others whom I did not recognize. We danced, and each had in his or her hand a green taper with a blue flame. Still under the delusion that I should obtain money, Michel persuaded me to move with the greatest celerity, and in order to do this, after I had stripped myself, he smeared me with a salve, and I believed myself then to be transformed into a wolf.
Oh, so they're not cooking crack, they're cooking skin cream.
Yeah, they're...
wolf salve, dude.
They're doing the Gwyneth Paltrow thing. I was at first somewhat horrified at my four wolf's feet and fur with which was covered all at once, but I found that I could now travel with the speed of the wind. This could not have taken place without the help of our powerful master, who was present during our excursion, though I did not perceive him till I had recovered my human form. Michel did the same as myself. When we had been 1 or 2 hours in this condition of metamorphosis, Michel smeared us again, and quick as thought, we resumed our human forms. The salve was given us by our masters. To me, it was given by Moiset, and to Michel, by his own master, Gilliman.
Wait, so was Michel also a wolf person during that?
Yeah, he was kind of the wolf person that brought Bergo into the fold.
It's like wolf MLM, you know?
Yeah, he gave Bergo the free samples.
Yeah.
And now Bergo has to sign up to like an $80 a week weekly subscription.
The wolf cream pyramid scheme?
I told you that Gwyneth Paltrow was involved.
You did. You did say that.
I warned you. Now, some of the murders that they confessed to were ripping apart a woman picking peas and then killing the man that tried to help her. They attacked, killed, and ate a girl of 4, leaving only one arm behind. While in human form, Bergot attacked a girl that was just out weeding her garden, snapping her neck like a twig, like that murder at the beginning of the Poughkeepsie tapes.
Is he a wolf?
But he was human here, right? Like, why did he do that?
He just loved killing.
I guess so.
Sometimes, you know, the moment seizes you. And you gotta be that girl's picked her last pee.
Murder makes me lose control. Murder makes me lose control. Alright, I'm done. Apparently, he also mauled a goat at some point, biting its throat and then stabbing it with a knife.
As you do, I guess.
Like, in that order?
Yeah, I think so. I assume he was, like, biting its throat while he stabbed it with a knife.
Yeah. Don't you imagine being like a 16th century farmer living your life? You've got your goats and stuff just kind of out doing goat shit. And you look over and this man walks up to your goat and just starts biting it.
And then stabbing it with a knife.
You're like, oh, this ain't working. He's got to stab it. Buddy, leave my goats alone.
Those are my goats.
Now, in a show of incredibly poor judgment, Verdun corroborated all of Bergot's statements, and they were both burned at the stake.
Okay, like,
what could you hope to achieve with that?
Yeah, if you're that guy and your idiot friend just spouts off this crazy story, wouldn't you be like, no, that ain't me, dude.
Yeah, I don't know that dude.
Yeah.
Never met him before in my life. Next up. Olaf Magnusson published his History of the Goths, Swedes, and Vandals in 1555, and in this book he claimed that Prussia and Lithuania were both jam-packed with real wolves and werewolves, who were brought into the fold by drinking a magic beer and reciting a spell. Oh yeah, that's how you get done. That's my favorite.
Swedes, Goths, and Vandals, man.
If the Animorphs had to get drunk to transform...
Oh, see, this is
Morse, dude.
This is sweet because I imagine that it's like the Sailor Moon magical girl transformation, where it's just like some hairy Eastern European man that drinks a stein of beer and then spins around and like his clothes vanish. Maybe it's a little bit sexy, and then you know he gets the fur and the claws and the teeth and just like touches down.
Oh, oh yeah, you gotta have the wolf howl in there as you transform.
You do. It's key, dude. It's key.
Yeah.
Starts licking his balls right there. Just.
All right. Dude,
listen. If I was a wolf, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you?
How did I know that someone was going to be like, come on. Come on.
Come on. Listen. You do it if you could. Don't tell me you've never tried.
Now, Olaf Magnusson.
Cut like this out of the podcast, please. Thank you.
Stays like right now. Now, Olaf Magnusson, like Herodotus, said a lot of things about a lot of things, and not very reliably. So let's take this with a couple grains of salt. Just if you were buying the magical beer, magical girl transformation, don't.
Okay, cool.
What's the recipe, though?
Beer, wolf, magic.
Wolf beer.
Standard.
Yep. You don't want the wolf beer, right? I'm not right, dude?
Yeah, you get the wolf yeast.
I'm not liking this one. Do you have a wolf IPA? I like my wolf beer a little hoppier.
I prefer a nice wolf lager.
Now we're going to start getting some, like I said, some increasingly spicy material. Next up, Gilles Garnier, also known as the Werewolf of Dole, who was executed on January 18th, 1573. He was burned at the stake after admitting to stalking, killing, and eating at least 4 children between the ages of 9 and 12. He claimed that he met a spirit or a specter in the forest while he was hunting that offered to change him into a wolf so that he could hunt better.
Deal.
Would you take that deal?
As a Frenchman in the 16th century? Probably. Life was hard for those people. Someone just comes up, offers you a free fur coat.
I'd be a little worried if they was just like, hey, I'll turn you into a wolf so you can hunt better. I'd be like, can I...
Well, you didn't say...
Can I turn back, though?
He did. Yeah, he offered... Yeah, okay. Never mind. I misread. But, like, just the fact that it's a spirit or specter... Just kind of throw me off a bit, you know?
I don't know, man. Pretty suspect. Can't even keep it straight. Was it a spirit? What? Was it a specter? Who knows?
That's what I'm saying, dude. You don't know. He doesn't know.
Tell us what kind of ghost it was.
That's the crux of this thing right here, dude. What kind of ghost was it?
I never said he could change back. I'd be worried.
He starts in October of 1572. With a 10-year-old girl he drags into a vineyard. He strangles her, strips her, and eats the flesh from her arms and thighs. Then he packs up a little doggy bag for his wife and he takes off.
And I assume has a nice wine pairing with her.
Doggy bag, dude.
And the...
Thank you. Yes, here's a little girl and a nice Chablis. Later, he attacked another girl, biting and clawing, until he was... Sorry, was the wine pairing too accurate for you?
Oh, no, I'm still a doggy bag, man.
So, he was interrupted by some people walking past when he attacked this second girl. And the girl did die, but because he was chased off, he didn't get to eat her. Which, in some ways, just strikes me as, like, poor manners.
It's a little rude.
A little rude. Garnier's next victim was a 10-year-old boy about a month later. And this kid got the same treatment as the first girl. He was killed, partially eaten, and then Garnier took some parts home to the wife.
Like, he's just bringing home the human bacon? Is that what's going on?
Just, I assume it's just chunks of meat. He probably carves it up. He's like, here's unspecified sustenance.
The mystery meat, honey. Here you go.
Throw it in with the turnips.
Get your protein there, wifey.
And I gotta be honest with you guys, I've done a lot of hiking, I've done a lot of outdoor stuff. Pip, you've come with me a lot. Yep. we have never just stumbled on a wolf in the middle of a meal, like, oh, oopsie daisy.
Like, are there Canadian wolves?
Yeah, totally.
100%.
Well, the reason I say is because, yeah, we haven't encountered any, so I didn't really know offhand, like, is there wolves?
Wolves up here? They're just, they're very smart and they have really good senses, so you don't see a wolf unless a wolf wants you to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike this guy who his wolf is very unprepared, dude.
I don't think he got a very good deal on that wolf transformation.
I think he was just lost in the sauce. Spirit saw
Spectre really fucked him.
I have all this extra lycanthropy from the dollar bin. Would you like one?
Great value lycanthropy.
Anyway, he goes for another boy in 1572, tearing him in half by biting and clawing at his midsection.
Jesus Christ, man.
So you're really seeing where this, like, werewolf, even without him claiming to be a wolf, you can really see why people were like, oh yeah, he was an animal.
Right.
Yeah.
So 1573 rolls around and he is hungry again. So he attacks a girl, eventually tearing her leg off to bring home for his wife.
The mystery of the meat has been solved.
Imagine your significant other says they're bringing dinner home, and you're all stoked. You're like, oh, a pizza, maybe a Crunchwrap Supreme with a Baja Blast. They walk in, and they just drop just a bloodied, severed leg that clearly belonged to a child on the table.
Hey, why does dinner have toes on it?
Why are you asking so many goddamn questions?
I don't see you out there getting dinner.
I think if my spouse brought back a human leg and was like, cook this, I would be too scared to say no.
Fair.
I mean, fair. Yeah, yeah.
My question is, like, was his wife prosecuted in this? What's up with that? I can't find anything on it, but I don't think you should get a pass if you just ate a human leg.
I mean, I have no idea. I don't know what the political climate was like back then. I don't know if it was cool or not.
If anyone can dig up this info for me, I would really appreciate that. Shoot me an email.
I think vis-a-vis political climate, I think she just wasn't considered enough important enough to record anything on her. Just historically, I don't think time was...
Could be.
That period of time was super good for women.
After giving his confessions and having over 50 people testify that they'd seen him attacking or eating children, sometimes as a man and sometimes as a loup-garou, he was burned at the stake.
Is that literally man wolf?
Yeah, basically.
Rather?
Wolf person, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Once again, very creative.
Hey, Lou.
The next story is one of my absolute favorites. This is the tale of Peter Stump, born around 1530 in Bedburg, Germany. So we know from old broadsheets and newspapers and pamphlets, this was at the very least a real court case with real punishments. His name, Stump, may or may not have been a reference to his missing left hand. People said that the werewolf had had its paw cut off, so the matching injury on Stump must have been proof that they were the same entity.
Honestly, pretty damning evidence. You chop the paw off a wolf, this man missing a hand. Lines up, doesn't it?
I mean, the real question is, when did he lose the hand? Because if they just cut the wolf off a paw and then found a dude who was missing the same hand, but it was like a 30-year-old wound, that doesn't seem like a reasonable conclusion.
That is a little more suspect. Dude. No relation.
Yeah. I mean, he may have been named Stump, like, during the trial.
Seems a little...
maybe?
A little rude, but all right.
Just name you after your disability? Seems a little harsh.
Hey, bad eyes, get over here.
So, he was put on trial in 1589 and then stretched on a rack. And after a little bit of gentle persuasion, he confessed to having practiced black magic since the tender age of 15. He said that the devil had given him a wolf, way cooler than an infinity gauntlet, by the way. I will take the werewolf belt instantly. And the belt let him anamorph into, and I quote... the likeness of a greedy, devouring wolf, strong and mighty, with eyes great and large, which sparkled in the night like fire, a mouth great and wide, with most sharp and cruel teeth, a huge body, and mighty paws.
Well, at least 3 out of 4 mighty paws, right?
True.
3 mighty paws and a mighty stump with 2 P's like my name. Write that down correctly.
Whatever happened to this wolf belt, dude?
Well, he said that if he took the belt off, he would transform back into a person, but they never found a belt like that in his position, in his possessions afterwards. But if I found that belt, I would not tell anyone. I'd just tuck that away. Yeah, yep. I haven't seen it, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah, no belt here. Ha ha. So
anyways, I gotta go.
Still out there.
Stump claimed that he'd been on a rampage for 25 years, claiming that he ate goats, lambs, and sheep. All totally normal. Not so normal is the fact that he also snacked on men, women, and children.
Yeah, fair.
He confessed to killing and eating 14 children and 2 pregnant women. Furthermore, he ripped the fetuses out from the women's bellies and ate their hearts, panting, hot, and raw. Jesus he said Christ, that they were dainty morsels.
I mean,
that's his exact words. Dainty morsels.
I mean, the heart of a fetus would be like a gumball, right?
just a little hors d'oeuvre. Like those little lemon meringue tarts that I like from the mall. But
like
gross.
A grape, but meaty.
Even worse and grosser is that one of the children was his own son, and people claimed that Stump had eaten his son's brain.
This is the second time we've talked about fathers eating their sons in this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of that going around.
Apparently, dude.
You gotta avoid the brain, though. It's the worst part. Allegedly.
But wait, there's more. He was also accused of having an incestuous relationship with his own daughter, and he had sex with a succubus sent by the devil. Which is kind of... I mean, that's a bad day for a succubus.
Was this
told
just
you gotta go bang some smelly French farmer who's been on a murder spree eating brains?
As he fucks his own daughter?
Was that part of the initial deal, or was the devil just like, damn, you're fucking wild in, here's a succubus?
It was... We were comparing it to an MLM earlier, and it's very much like that, where he met his murder quota for the month, and they sent him a free package of lotion and a succubus.
And a succubus. Ooh, yep.
That's spicy. I like to imagine... I imagine, like, that Flintstones bit where, like, the succubus would just look at the camera and be like, it's a living. On the 31st of October, 1589, Halloween, Stump, his daughter, and his mistress were brutally executed. Like, wait, really brutally.
Is the mistress the succubus, or is the mistress a third person that fucked this man?
A third person that fucked this man. I don't know how he did it.
Damn.
You know what they say? Once you go stump, the guy got nothing. Get the hump, dude.
Hey, there you go. The old hump there. The stump.
Yeah.
Jake the poet.
Lyrical
genius. Women, all the women are like, hey, you ever get freaky with that thing?
Do you think he used the stump?
I hope not.
I can't imagine that would be very sexy.
Do you think he ever wolfed out, dude? Put the belt on.
Dude, that's a good cosplay. So,
horny wolf?
When we're talking about this execution, could we get some ambient metal riffs in post-production? Let's do this. So, he was put to a wheel where they used red-hot pincers to just tear chunks of flesh off him. Then, they smashed his limbs with the blunt side of an axe to prevent him from coming up through the ground after they buried him, which is wild because they didn't actually bury him. They beheaded him and then burned his body with the bodies of his daughter and mistress, all of whom had been flayed and strangled.
This
finally,
is, I think the
they put
craziest
up,
way to kill someone.
Finally, they put up the wheel, and a figure of a wolf on top of a large pole. And at the very top, like a star on a Christmas tree, they placed Stump's bloody, severed head.
Festive.
Extremely.
Dude, they just fucked up this guy.
They I feel mad. Like this one shakes me the most, honestly, because they didn't just kill this man, they, like, unmade him.
Yeah, actually, it's really barbaric.
Next up, the Beast of Gévaudan. This was a thing, a man-eating thing. A wolf, or a group of wolves, or it could have been a lot of things, and I'm going to get to that. Anyway, this happened in south-central France between 1764 and 1767. The attacks were said to have been committed by a beast with huge teeth and a large, noticeable tail. I found two very different notes for death tolls. One 1987 study claimed that there were 600 attacks and 500 deaths, but another source claimed a number closer to 100. But either way, we're talking big leagues. And a lot of people were killed by having their throats torn out, which is like double killed.
Just so brutal.
Not how I want to go. Reports of the beast, capital B, because I'm putting some respect on it, claimed that it was generally wolf-like, with a tall, lean frame, a long head, a flattened snout, pointed ears, and a wide mouth. Interestingly, people all seemed to notice that its tail was much longer than a wolf's, with a tufted end.
I'll be real, that's kind of dopey proportions for a wolf.
Yeah, a little bit. The fur was russet or tawny, with black streaks on its back, and there was a distinct white heart shape on its belly. The beast kicks things off in 1764, when Marie Jeanne Vallée was tending cattle in the Mirequois forest near the town of Langon. She saw the beast, but the bulls in the herd charged it and scared it off. But it wasn't too long before the beast finally achieved its objective. A mere handful of days later, 14-year-old Jean Boulet was killed in the nearby village of Les Hubacs.
I didn't have that home defense cattle.
As you bulls, did back then.
Bulls are legitimately scary. Like, cows are very docile.
Bulls are legit scary. My bulls will fuck you up, dude. Used to keep cows and had a bull there, and whenever he went to feed it, he had to, like, genuinely, every time he had to do a fucking dance around this thing. Because he wanted to get him.
They get mad. By the end of this year, people were saying that there had to be two beasts, because there were just so many attacks. This thing was targeting children, men, women, anyone alone and outside of the village was apparently fair game for it to come out and attack its favorite body parts, the head and neck. This understandably led to a rising panic that spread through the entire countryside, because people in those days were pretty spread out. On January 12th of 1765, we have Jacques Portefeuille and his seven friends, who were attacked but fought the thing off. And if this is true, this is fucking terrifying, because predators do not just jump into a group of eight men and start attacking. Predators like surprise, right? A swift finish and a quick attack and prey on loners.
Right.
This thing just attacked eight full-grown men.
Imagining like some like kung fu movie scene or something.
Sort
this
of.
Big furry dude just in the middle.
Yo, kung fu werewolf.
Hollywood hire us right there.
Voiced by Jack Black.
They fought off the beast, but this was such a big deal that the French king got involved. He paid Portefeuille 300 livres, which is like 20 grand today, what an unskilled laborer would make in a 3,000-hour work year.
Jesus.
And gave his companions 350 to split.
Now, listen, would you fight a wolf for $20,000?
Yeah.
I'm pretty poor,
and you and seven friends.
But I'm scared of wolves, dude.
Me too. Listen, I mean, you could bring grand. Seven there's friends.
Yeah, yes.
8v1? Shit, dude.
Yeah, like if we're going to make a raid team.
Raid the wolf. It'd be maybe more equivalent to like those level one raids on Hogger, okay? More that style.
I was going to say this is just a Hogger raid.
Yeah.
This, by the way, this is why you put your name in the title, because you get royalties. also the king educated Portify at the state's expense, which is pretty major at the time. That's your ticket out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then King Louis XV decides to send in a professional. Enter Captain Duhamel of the Clermont Prince Dragoons.
That's a sick title, dude.
That is a sick title. Maybe too sick of a title, because the locals didn't like him or want to help him. He apparently almost shot the beast a couple of times, but his own people got in the way or let the beast slip past the laid trap. It was odd behavior from the villagers, for sure.
He should have tipped better.
He should have tipped better. He was doing that French thing where when he wanted service at the cafe, he'd just snap his fingers.
I bet Captain somebody...
Captain Duhamel.
Of the Clermont Prince Dragoons sounds like somebody who would just snap his fingers for service.
Now, after a handful of fuck-ups, the king decided that it is time for a change. He sent two professional wolf hunters named Jean-Charles Marc-Antoine Vaumel de Hennival and his son Jean-François, henceforth known collectively as the Jeans.
That is the most French name I think I've ever heard.
Incredibly French.
If I never have to say that full name again, I'm not mad about it.
A baguette manifested physically in my home when you said that.
Ever since I said that name, red wine has not stopped plaguing me. Duhamel had run big hunting parties, that was his plan, but the two Jeans figured that stealth was the way to get her done. So on February 17th, 1765... the Jeans arrived at Clermont-Ferrand with a pack of 8 bloodhounds that were trained explicitly for tracking wolves. Kind of an interesting mix with the stealth approach to just have a bunch of Bane bloodhounds just sent in the area.
When I think Splinter Cell, I think pack of hunting dogs.
Oh, yeah.
I think he just had a hard pivot, like, hey, yeah, we're going to sneak up on this horrible killing machine. Actually, let's JK, get a dude. Bunch of dogs. Let's let the dogs do the work.
We gotta send this dude away, this Captain Duhamel, because we need stealth. And as soon as the dude was gone, he was like, oh, they were like, oh, thank God, that dude was such a dick. Bring out the dogs. So they spent months hunting wolves, but the cycle continued. And it started to take its toll with the continued attacks. Anyone who's a fan of a sports team knows this cycle, where, like, the team is doing bad, time for replacements, get rid of the coach, get rid of the GM, do what you gotta do, shake it up.
Is that what they did so for sports? Saddened. Instead of sports, yeah, they were just like, hunt the wolf.
Yeah, that's why it's called sport hunting.
Hunting is a sport.
I guess so.
So saddened, the newly blue Jeans returned to Paris in June of 1765. Thank you.
Perhaps the earliest documented case of blue Jeans.
Replaced by a new duo, the sole arquebus gun bearer that the king had at his command and lieutenant of his hunt, one Francois Antoine and his son, also named Antoine, who arrived in June on June 22nd of that year. Lots of people just naming.
Go ahead, sir.
Go ahead. I was just gonna say lots of people just naming their kids after themselves.
It was a very, very French thing to do at the time.
Second verse is the first.
The arquebus was that hand cannon thing, right?
Sort of, yeah. It was like the predecessor to the musket. When they took Gatling guns and mounted guns and made them portable, the first thing that they did was make hook guns, where it was a regular gun with hooks on the bottom, and you'd put the hooks over the battlements of wherever you were shooting from to stabilize it so that you could move it around. And eventually they were like, well, what if we made the gun a little bit smaller and removed the hooks, and you got the arquebus. And then after that came more standard muskets and firearms, and they kind of proliferated.
Right.
Now, about 3 months later, in late September after he'd arrived, Antoine killed a large gray wolf, about 31 inches high at the shoulder, 5 feet 7 inches long, weighing around 130 pounds.
That's a pretty big wolf. That's a pretty big wolf.
Antoine's official statement read, "We declare, by the present report signed from our hand, we never saw a big wolf that could be compared to this one. Hence, we believe this could be the fearsome beast that caused so much damage."
It big. It gotta be it.
This is the biggest wolf we could find. Please pay us. We don't want to keep hunting wolves.
The animal
That's ruined what happened, right?
The animal was actually also identified by its scars, which several people recognized as wounds that had been left by people defending themselves. So they stuffed the wolf and shipped it off to the palace at Versailles. While
is it
Antoine,
still there?
No, it was lost during the French Revolution.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn those French.
And they shipped the bodies off, and the hunters stayed in the area looking for the wolf's mate and pups. Now, the hunter managed to get the female wolf and one pup, but the other pup, after being shot, fled into the rocks. Now, the pup that he did kill was already larger than its mother, and when they examined the body, they found that it had a double set of dew claws, which is a hereditary malformation found in the Bas Rouge dog breed.
Huh.
Eventually, not finding the pup and assuming that it was dead, Antoine returned to Paris, where he was basically a celebrity werewolf hunter now. He was given over 9,000 livres, like $200,000 today.
All right, what's a better title? Prince of Dragoons or Celebrity Werewolf Hunter?
Celebrity Werewolf Hunter.
Oh, dude, no. Prince of Dragoons is definitely still cooler.
It's up there. I'm leaning towards Celebrity Werewolf Hunter.
If you could be a celebrity Prince Dragoon, though.
All right, now listen. Which celebrity is most likely to be a werewolf?
Or a dragoon, apparently.
Seth Rogen.
No
reason. I just don't like him.
That guy that plays Wolverine looks like he could pull off a werewolf.
Hugh Jackman? Yeah.
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 Now, on December 22nd, alas, two more boys were attacked, despite them having figured that they'd taken care of the problem. The boys escaped, but the beast later successfully attacked more people. Even worse, remember that first case where the bulls chased off the beast? Well,
yeah.
Shepherds were now reporting that the beast did not show any concern for the presence of cattle or the charging of bulls. This thing was now fearless.
It's just angry.
A dozen more deaths followed soon. Finally, a hunter named Jean Chastel shot it on the slopes of Mount Moshe during a hunt in June of 1767. He claimed to have used a large caliber bullet and buckshot combination, something that he made himself out of silver.
Huh. Is this where that whole thing comes from? The silver bullet thing?
Yeah, silver bullets kill a werewolf. The body was brought... Yeah, man. This is why I wanted to start at the back, because you can see where some of this stuff comes from.
Yeah,
the lore kind of congealing together.
Now, the body was brought to a local castle for an autopsy, where it was found that the animal's stomach still contained the remains of its last victim. The Marin Report, this is named after the notary who assisted the surgeon, said that the creature was a wolf, but not a normal one. To quote, "This animal, which seemed to us to be a wolf, but extraordinary and very different by its figure and its proportions of the wolves that we see in this country. This is what we have certified by more than 300 people from all around who came to see him."
300 people were like, it seems like a wolf, but it is very different.
Yeah.
Which...
That's a big wolf.
It sounds like people just pointing at things and saying, "That's a dog."
Is that a wolf? It's like a streetlight. Now, people have theorized that this was a Eurasian wolf or maybe a pack of wolves. French naturalist Michel Louis claims that it was a crossbreed between one of Chastel's red-colored hounds and a wolf, which would explain its double dew claws, and that its resistance to bullets was because it had an armored boar hide strapped to it. And I gotta be honest, I think the werewolf idea is actually a little more credible.
See, this is where...
You're putting boar hide on wolves, dude. Who's doing that?
This is where I'm sitting in the position of I want to believe, but I find it difficult to.
Yeah, the second you bring up the Kevlar wolves, dude, that's when I opt out.
Yeah, the crossbreed wolf thing, I believe that. That seems pretty legit.
Sure.
Armoring it seems a little much. Also, I don't see how boar hide is bulletproof.
Well, cured leather versus old school firearms?
I
mean, I guess they just didn't make it quite the same as they used to.
It's like light armor, dude, right?
I guess guns kind of suck back then, though, eh?
Yeah. Especially against, like they would have probably just used buckshot for the most, right? For the most part.
Probably. I believe that a lot of old guns where you would just pile in, like, a bunch of little chunks of metal.
Yeah. Just
fire it. Now, after the Beast of Gévaudan, later in the centuries, we have a handful of serial killers who were either decried as werewolves, or in one case, used it as a defense in a murder case. Enter Manuel Blanco Romasanta, who confessed to the murder of 13 people. He was tried in Alariz, Spain, and successfully avoided the death penalty by professing to be a werewolf. I have no fucking idea how this worked.
Listen, that's how you establish your dominance in prison. Day one, guys, I'm a werewolf.
You just walk in there and fucking rip your shirt off and howl, dude.
Oh, woo!
And that's now, your best howl? Aw, dude, you could do better than that.
That was half-hearted. It's kind of late. I don't want to wake up my roommates with bad wolf impressions.
Sir, gentlemen, I'm recording a podcast.
Okay, all right. Now, tomorrow.
Now, finally, we'll get in post. The most modern werewolf sightings on record, the Beast of Bray Road. The final leg of our journey begins in the year 1936. We're starting to get modern.
That's getting a little uncomfortably modern.
Just outside Jefferson, Wisconsin, our hero, Mark Shackleman, was the night watchman for St. Coletta School for Exceptional Children. The school had really big grounds with a bunch of old buildings and an orchard and this big open field with old Native American burial mounds on it.
As you do. And
this is getting pretty cliche spooky.
And yeah, a little bit. You want cliche spooky? The school was located in a former convent, which I've been in former convents. Not inviting.
Yeah, it's a little fucking terrifying, actually.
You know that slightly stiff, uncomfortable feeling that you get when you walk into a funeral home?
Yeah.
No.
Being in a former convent is very much like that, where you just walk in and you're like, I feel like I should be dressed nicely, and also that no one should be allowed to laugh in here because there's probably a funeral.
That's happening. Just the good Catholic in you, dude.
Probably. So, one night, Shackleman was patrolling the grounds, doing his rounds, crossing the dark field, when he saw a shadow by one of the mounds, and the shadow appeared to be something hunched over on all fours, digging into the mound. And at first, Shackleman thought that it might be like a dog or a wolf, because it was digging like one. But on closer inspection, he realized that it was way too big for that. His light hit the shape, and it looked at him and then stood up. The thing was over 6 feet tall and had a canine face and thick, shaggy fur, but with a muscular man's body instead of a wolf's. He said that he could smell rotting.
If I was a night watchman and something like that stood up 6 feet tall, I would be like, have a good night, sir, and I would leave.
Reasonable. He said that he could smell rotting meat and a thick, heavy animal stink, which I think anyone that has ever worked with, like, dogs or livestock knows what I'm talking about. Thankfully, this thing turned and just loped off into the nearby woods, because I imagine he was shitting himself. He saw it again the next night, digging into the same mound furiously. He readied his flashlight to strike it if it came at him. But it did, instead, probably the scariest thing it possibly could have done other than run at him. It opened its dripping mouth, showing large fangs, and tried to fucking speak. The sound was like an animal imitating human speech, rough and growly and nonsensical. He froze, petrified, and the creature turned and left, and he never saw it again.
I like how he had that first encounter, and the next day he didn't come back with a gun.
He made a friend, dude. The wolf's trying to fucking talk to him now. He wants to hang out.
Yeah, I'll play patty cake with the wolf man.
Yeah, dude. You want to help me dig? No, that's cool. It's fine. I'll just be over here dig with my fucking wolf hands.
Just toss him a milk bone.
to have a cigarette break with the Wolfman.
So you said this is in the 30s, right?
Yeah, 1936.
That's, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Like, human, like, muscular human body.
This is sounding a lot closer to like, the werewolves that we kind of know in more modern movies and fiction.
For sure.
And nonfiction, now, theoretically.
Now, flash forward to the 1980s. In the same area, where a woman reported a large beast attempting to break into her home and leaving one of her horses with a large gash on its back. She claimed that it left footprints over 12 inches long. This set off a flurry of sightings in the area.
Damn.
One woman spotted it crossing the road in front of her car, and another driver saw it crouched by the side of the road, eating an animal with its hands.
Nasty. It's
pretty fucked up.
Imagine how scary that would be, cruising up and just seeing something hunched over, and you look and it's got like a rabbit in its hands, and it's just eating it raw.
I saw a homeless person doing that once, and it shook me to my core.
No, you didn't.
Pip, you gotta hit us with this story right now.
It was just it's kind of a public park area, and I was walking by, and I turned, and this man had clearly, like, caught a rabbit and was just eating it from, like, the middle, like Gollum eating a fish. And we made eye contact, and he just ran off and, like, dropped the rabbit. And I stood there shocked for, like, a minute or two, just like, oh, God, what the fuck? And then I grabbed the rabbit with my, like, two fingers and just put it in a dumpster because I didn't want him coming back for it.
Fair.
A feral homeless person?
Hunger does things to people, man.
Fair enough, man.
Now, we flash forward again a little bit, and in 1999, an 18-year-old girl was driving down Bray Road when the right side of her car bounced up into the air as though she'd run over something large. She gets out, as you do, and looks around the car to see if there's some poor animal or child or something that she's hit, but nothing.
Oh, the werewolf's gonna steal her car.
Sorry, I need
GTA
this.
GTA werewolf, dude, just hops in.
So she looks up and sees this massive wolfish form standing on two legs off to the side of the road. She flips the fuck out, jumps back in the car, and peels out while the creature leaps onto the trunk of her car before sliding off in the slick rain when she started peeling out.
Jesus Christ.
Alan?
Even more recently, in 2018, Danny Morgan reported seeing the beast at about 10 p.m. on January 27th in the town of Spring Prairie, which is also in Wisconsin. He was driving from Lake Geneva to Mineomoni Falls when he saw the thing by the road and snapped a really blurry cell phone picture that I've actually posted on our Facebook page if you guys want to check it out.
It's real shaggy looking.
Yeah, I don't know about all this.
In classic Bigfoot photographer fashion,
it looks like
very blurry. Yep. I mean, it was taken from a moving car, right?
Yeah, sure. You can see the motion blur in the speed sign too.
Yeah. But I still feel like the legs doesn't look.
It's weird taken from like the look passenger huge. Side. It doesn't look huge.
Yeah.
The perspective again, though, like, makes it look smaller.
The slope of the side of the road and stuff. I don't know. I think it's not a bad picture. The lighting stays consistent on the thing, which granted is blurry, but does appear to have two legs striding forward, as well as at least one arm in the front that I see.
It does kind of look like it's got one of those like digigrade legs as well. So definitely not something human. The proportions definitely don't look human.
I see that too. That back leg is digitigrade, yes.
Yeah, it does. The body looks kind of furry, though. It looks more like a sheep. But that does not sound wolfy at all.
So, it could be, like, not necessarily a werewolf, but more, like, what's that Native American thing? What's it called?
A skinwalker?
A skinwalker?
Yes, that is what I'm thinking of, yeah.
That checks out, I think.
That's an interesting point with beast digging into the burial mounds.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing about it, right? Because a lot of, like, that culture was about, like, Bones of the Dead and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was reported that skinwalkers would grind up bones and make it was called corpse powder, and they would use corpse powder to perform their evil rituals. Granted, I could be incorrect about this, because this is, you know, Navajo lore, and they don't really share it with outsiders. So everything that we know about skinwalkers is kind of heard from a person who knew a person.
Right.
I will be fair. Yeah. If I held the secret knowledge of how to become a horrible monster, I would keep that to myself as well.
Yeah.
Fair.
So most recently, we get to Ron Rice, who saw the creature in broad daylight near Lyons, Michigan. Lyons? Lyon? I assume you pronounce it Lyons because you're American.
Sounds Michigan, yeah.
He said it was large, over 7 feet tall, and it looked at him from about 150 feet away. He was delivering a package, and this thing was standing in the woods a ways away. It looks at him, walks out of the woods on its hind legs, picked something up from the grass, he didn't see what it was, and then walked back. Broad daylight. So...
the fuck?
So yo, overall, if I was that FedEx employee, I would be putting that on a blacklist. Well, I'm not delivering there anymore. There is a wolfman.
They can come get it themselves.
They can pick it up from the shipping place.
All fun and games until the wolfman walks into the FedEx depot and demands his package angrily.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe he's picking up something thinking it's the package, sees the delivery guy, and he's like, I'm over here. What the fuck, dude?
Maybe he's got a receipt. Listen, if the wolfman comes in with a receipt to pick up his package, you gotta give it to him, right?
I think you do.
I mean, if he has ID.
I guess. Yeah.
So, gentlemen, overall, what do we have here? Is there any chance, ignoring the inherent silliness of transforming people, that this is something that could have some kind of truth to it? Is it all just mass hysteria fueled by the fear of a predator?
Are we talking on the whole werewolf stuff?
Looking at different cultures having similar legends and stories.
There's just enough that kind of adds up. Like, that's harder to refute that I do want to believe that there's something out there going on.
That's kind of how I feel about it, too. Like, it is very silly turning into an animal, right? But there's just so many instances of this kind of a story throughout history that it's hard for me to completely disregard every aspect of it.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, we don't have all the answers. We don't even know all of the questions. But hopefully we've given you guys something to think about tonight. I just wanted to take a moment and thank you all for tuning in to the debut episode of the Out of the Abyss podcast with Lot, Pip, and Jake. We hope to have you guys around next week when we start talking about possibly my favorite topic in the whole field, aliens. So, take care, and until next time, remember, everything has an element of mystery. Good night.